This episode of the Structured Rambling Podcast is dedicated to Daryl, Tim, Lelania, and Maraid, the people I call in my head the Table 35 All-Stars. They know why. This is Structured Rambling, a podcast about ideas from literature and about literature. Episodes can focus on a single text, or a theme from multiple texts. My name is Paul Sonsby. Welcome. This past New Year's Eve, Green Day was playing on TV, and I guess during their rendition of their 2004 hit American Idiot, instead of saying, "Don't want to be part of the redneck agenda," a stab at then-President George W. Bush, who had just invaded Iraq for reasons, Billy Joe Armstrong sang, "Don't want to be part of a MAGA agenda." No explanation needed. Apparently this offended some on the extreme right, or the narcissistic vocal types like Elon Musk, who whined about it on X, that toilet bowl he has single-handedly turned Twitter into, and that's pretty impressive considering what a toilet bowl it already was. Only Elon Musk could make something as toxic as Twitter worse. What Armstrong did was a good thing, no matter your political stripe. Though, I will caveat, if you see Trump as anything but a stain on the underpants of humanity, well, you're wrong. It was a good thing because he took a 20-year-old song and made it topical and relevant to a new time. This after just releasing a new song, which you just heard, entitled "The American Dream is Killing Me," which shows that this band is incapable of writing a bad pop punk song. They're the kings of it. Sorry, Blink-182. American Idiot, the concept album where Green Day became a protest band, where an already great band elevated themselves to world class by taking a page from The Who's book. It turns 20 this year. And I want to celebrate that great album today, as well as their first makeout hit, which is celebrating its 30th anniversary, Dookie, home to Basket Case. But most of all, I just want to celebrate Green Day. And I get to say the thing. I liked Green Day before they were cool. It's true. It's true this time. Sometime in the early 90s, some friends who I'd eventually join a band with introduced me to Green Day's second but first real actual album, 1991's Kerplunk. Daryl, one of the people who I have dedicated this episode to, was listing off for me during a coffee break the number of great albums released in 1991. The Use Your Illusions, Metallica's Black Album, Pearl Jam's 10, Blood Sugar Sex Magik, Kerplunk. It was delightful until Maraid, another person this episode is dedicated to, pointed out that that's the year she was born. And, well, we were depressed. Anyways, how influential was it to us? How influential was that early listening to Kerplunk? Well, if you go to SoundCloud and look up a band called Fat Tony's Contract, you'll hear that influence. That's us. And if you don't hear pure Green Day ripoff, you're kidding us both. But I'm still kind of proud of it. 17-year-old me had some bass licks. Dookie came out when I was finishing grade 11, and it was highly anticipated among this group of friends. Longview was inspirational to a kid like me just finding his chops on bass guitar. In fact, my early bass playing in Fat Tony's Contract was pure wannabe Mike Dirnt, essentially leading me to the other greats like Chris Squire and Geddy Lee and Justin Chancellor. Though I never got as good at any of them, those are the type of bass players I emulated. But Dookie still felt like our thing until Basket Case took over the world the following summer, and from then on, it was a stream of hits. Woodstock 94's Mudfight and MTV and Much Music's love affair with When I Come Around, it made them superstars. And they were kids. They were like 21. The rest of the 90s saw them maintain but slowly wane a little in popularity. I still have loved everything they put out. And they had some massive hits with, of course, Good Riddance, The Time of Your Life, Minority, still probably my all-time favorite Green Day song, Hitchin' a Ride, and with a little help from Seinfeld, Good Riddance popping up again. But album-wise, the next three after Dookie just didn't match the success, and their non-punk experimentation was divisive with fans. Punk fans are like metal fans, purist, cynical, critical, generally chauvinistic, and unappreciative of anything artsy. Frankly, they're like Star Wars or pornography fans. They know exactly what they want, the same thing they've always wanted, and they will not accept change. I don't feel comfortable with the pornography analogy because it's not true. So let's just say Star Wars fans. Although the crossover, stop in there. Then, in that murky period after 9/11, when it felt like we were holding our breath all the time, Green Day went into the studio. Around the time W invaded Iraq because he said so, their mixtapes were stolen and they were set back to square one. For most bands, that'd be a disaster. For Green Day, it was a moment of inspiration. They took what they could from those sessions and they just started fresh. It was for them, their fans, their legacy, and rock music in general, one of the great moments in history. They went back to their basics and they also got really ambitious. They created a concept album. Sometimes I wonder if that 2003 album, which was to be called Cigarettes and Valentines, would have been just more of what Nimrod and Waiting were. Good albums. Waiting has some great tunes. It's got Minority, like I said, my favorite Green Day song to this day. But it was all part of the slow ride into obscurity, or at least lesser obscurity? No. But they were still treading the same kind of thing. And so when they restarted, they went for broke. That theft would have crushed most bands. Green Day doubled down and made American Idiot. Billy got ticked at W Politics. The experiment with Who Style Concept went on. And remember Good Riddance, how big a deal it was that Green Day would do a slow song and an acoustic song? Well, now they were going to just do straight-up radio-friendly ballads like Wake Me Up When September Ends. But they also did two multi-part long plays over 9 minutes long, including Jesus of Suburbia. Jesus of Suburbia is simply an incredible creation. It's just mind-blowing. Good luck finding this band creating this thing had Cigarettes and Valentines not happened. Now, personally, I only sort of have liked the title track, American Idiot, like it's great, whereas Jesus and especially Holiday have always been the album's glories for me. But here's the thing, kids. How creative a band are you that this masterpiece is born out of failure? Steal our mixtapes? Call us sellouts? Okay, here's the biggest thing we've ever made and we're going to conquer the world with it. I was a fairly young teacher, and every kid in the school then was wearing a heart holding a hand grenade shirt. The live album that came out of it, Bullet in a Bible, is a triumph in entertainment. It's showing Billy Joe Armstrong as one of the greatest frontmen in rock. Dookie was their first major label release. How many bands can release something that massively successful a decade apart? And there's something to say about being a band who releases your albums in years that end in four, because Saviors is looking like it is in the right company. They were just a grimy little post-punk band from California, initially named Sweet Children, eventually naming themselves for a day spent inside smoking weed. I wonder, do they always think that that was the best choice? But there you go. At least in 30-some years, they realize they don't have to always have green accents on everything. That's for the best. I recall before they made it big with Dookie, mentioning that I liked them at a family gathering, and one of my more humorless aunts saying, "Guess all the good ideas are gone." I wonder what she thinks of them now that they're one of the biggest bands in the world, now that they're playing in the hockey arena she goes to. Oh, she probably doesn't care. She hasn't had a new experience she enjoyed since 1986, but I digress. Green Day were never on the hardcore SoCal scene, like Bad Religion and Social Distortion. Glommed in with The Offspring and Goldfinger, they were resented by true punks for being too pop, too melodic, and of course for being sellouts, whatever that means. Green Day, like Bad Religion began, would grow into their role as descendants of Operation Ivy, first as a power punk band for the kids, and then again for their loud political stances. Now, Bad Religion is older than Operation Ivy, but their success was around the same time. Green Day's latest release, as I mentioned, Saviors, is one of the best things I've heard from them in some time. Back to front, they've had loads of good singles. And it sort of makes you think that this amazing band, with its manic drummer, its my teenage bassist hero, and one of the absolute best frontmen in rock, just really lands on those years ending in four. I think they've done it again. I think they have achieved again. If anything else, I'm liking Saviors. And so I want to end this episode discussing some Green Day songs. I mentioned that the actual song, American Idiot, is fine to be, but not exactly my favorite. Meanwhile, The American Dream is Killing Me, the lead single from Saviors, is a work of genius. I like it way more. Well, what are the best Green Day songs to this subjective little lamb that I am? Allow me to walk you through them. Two songs, even three songs, have always stood out for me from their first LP, which was a combination of EPs, The Judge's Daughter, 1,000 Hours, and the live favorite, Paper Lanterns. Paper Lanterns. An early jammer. It actually shows a greater variety in these albums, especially with 1,000 Hours, than Green Day would show until they got Dan Nimrod. But Green Day at their finest is Paper Lanterns. Now, the most experimental from their early years comes from Kerplunk, kind of a two-parter called Christie Road. Incidentally, Paper Lanterns and Christie Road were both covered over and over by Fat Tony's Contract back in the 90s. But when you consider the composition experiments they'd make on American Idiot and 21st Century Breakdown, maybe it doesn't seem that impressive, but at the time, it was a neat change of pace on a pop-punk album and became an early favorite and sing-alongable. Take away the
the tracks at Cristero.
What young kid wouldn't learn to play bass and go do-do-do-do-do in that chorus? Come on. Out of the Dookie Sessions came J.A.R., a eulogy to a lost friend, and to this day, up there in the holy trinity of Green Day songs for me. I have three favorites. I like to number things. I have so many favorites, but I have three perfect Green Day songs. J.A.R. is one of them, if you've been paying attention, another is Minority, and the third will come too. I don't know why J.A.R. didn't make the album, but since the day I first heard it on the radio in 1995, and then on the Angus soundtrack, it's been one of the best. And they've recently started playing it live again. It's that aggressive bass opening, that rare guitar solo for the period, and that ambiguous a cappella ending. Just a good tune. From Dookie proper came She. A beautiful hard rocker with one of the best melodies of this era of Green Day. Billy Joe Armstrong is one of the best frontmen in rock for a lot of reasons, and a big one is his ability to craft anthems. She never sounds so good as when 20,000 people are singing along just like this. I have personally always preferred the follow-up Insomniac to Dookie myself, but that might just be my own nostalgia factor. Regardless, another Fat Tony's Contract favorite live was good old Geek Stink Breath. But from that album, there is nothing like Stuck With Me to show a band at the absolute height of their power. And this album, better overall mix than Dookie. Now, Nimrod's lead single, Hitchin' a Ride, is a great point in a more diverse direction. Nimrod being the album with the soundtrack of Grad 98 everywhere, Good Riddance. Hitchin' a Ride suffered comparisons to the Stray Cats, but inspiration draws, and you get one of their good rockers. Another live one, allowing people to count to four. And then you got Warning with my personal favorite, Minority. It's the one. It's my favorite Green Day song. Certainly, it's the most Green Day song of my favorites. I want to thank you for listening today. And if you enjoyed my podcast, please feel free to give me a rating and review. Episodes come out at the beginning and middle of pretty much every month. Have a great day. Minority, I believe, unintentionally predicted American Idiot through the failure of cigarettes and Valentine's, and it had to happen in between American Idiot itself, because American Idiot itself is, like Dookie, an album I listen to over and over. The first with friends in high school, that's Dookie, and American Idiot. A lot of the time, on road trips with my new girlfriend, who's now my wife. It's funny that I love it, but many of the biggest hits are, they're just fine to me. My band, my current band, used to play Boulevard of Broken Dreams, but for me, it's Holiday. It's my favorite, along with the epic Jesus of Suburbia, the album's crowning glory, but it's all good. And then they would release another concept album called 21st Century Breakdown. And its lead single is one of those great Green Day sounding like Green Day songs. Know Your Enemy is right up there for Minority and Quality. Definitely shows consistency connecting all of their times. Interestingly, 21st Century Breakdown has some really cool B-sides, like them covering A Quick One While He's Away by The Who. But this tune. Now you're thinking, is that the third one, Paul? It's up there. Maybe if we're going to be numerical, it's number four. I'm getting kind of silly. But I'll tell you, no, my third favorite Green Day song, for me, a perfect Green Day song, is from the less inspired Uno Dos Tres. They were a little too experimental for me, but we wouldn't have Saviors without the changes made. But of course, the song is the lead single off Uno, Oh Love. It's the best slow song this band has ever done. Now, it's not all been killer. The last couple of albums haven't been all knockouts, although there have still been songs like Youngblood from Revolutionary Road that shows that this band is good, and when they're great, there's nobody better. And so we come back to this year's release, Saviors, which I'm already just loving every bit of, and people are describing as a massive success, I guess. And a tri-successor to Dookie, with Dookie, American Idiot, and finally Saviors as some kind of a inspired trilogy. The American Dream is killing me, just so awesome. But I have been singing the song Bobby Socks to my wife a lot lately, so I think it's one for the ages, but for certain, it's one for the all-killer, no-filler types. Nearly 35 years, this pop-punk band has shown that they're the best one out there and that pop-punk can no longer be a slag. You can't argue with this sort of success and quality. You can't argue with this sort of entertainment. If you've never seen Green Day live, do. This summer, they're touring and playing all of Dookie and American Idiot for their respective 30th and 20th anniversaries. This is one of the best live bands behind one of the most entertaining frontmen on the planet. Since the 90s, during the cover of Op Ivy's Knowledge, Billy has pulled a fan on stage to play the three chords on guitar. You can find dozens of versions of it on YouTube, and it's usually some kid. The teacher in me absolutely adores this moment. It's the sight of him, upstage, watching a young kid head out with the guitar on the thrust stage, grinning from ear to ear, playing for thousands. Green Day, thank you for never growing up. I am indeed having the time of my life. I want to thank you for listening today, and if you enjoyed my podcast, please feel free to give me a rating and review. Episodes come out at the beginning and middle of pretty much every month. Have a great day.